All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the American Vindicta Show. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. So today, we're going to talk about cryptids, but we're going to talk about it from my perspective. Now, I think I have an interesting perspective about the mysterious world of cryptids, all the encounters of different types of creatures that people have seen from around the world. More especially, we'll focus in on just America, and to see if there are any government accounts of these creatures. Now, before we dive too deep, we have to understand something, that we have to be able to build a credible witness before we really delve into anything. So, you know, with law enforcement, whenever we go out to interview somebody, you know, we take into consideration if this person is one of the crazies, if this person is intoxicated, if we've had a run-in with them before. So, you know, we kind of judge who we're speaking to. And a lot of times we're pretty good judges of character. You get to meet a lot of people. You get to learn a lot of lies. So I wanted to just explain to you real quick, if we're going to talk about cryptids, if we're going to investigate cryptids, and they have all these investigative shows on Discovery Channel and Travel Channel, you got History Channel, and they're entertaining. They're there for entertainment purposes. One of my beefs has always been that I don't believe they're taken seriously. I believe you, in a lot of cases, have very fanatical people who, you know, they have all their machinations, they have all their ideas, and they believe what they believe, and I think many of them have seen something. However, there are many who are brought on as witnesses to add to the depth of the program. And those people, a lot of times, can ruin it. And the other problem with this is trying to recreate a scene, all right? In law enforcement, the thing that we can do is we can recreate a crime scene. And that helps us to better understand what occurred during the crime, and we can process it better. Now, with a lake monster sighting or a Bigfoot sighting, we can't exactly recreate the scene unless we go to the area where it occurred and then try to replicate to the dimension of what was seen. That's very hard. And, you know, a lot of times people don't have the they don't have the time of day to do that. They don't have the care to do it. They just want to get witness testimony. Okay, thank you very much. This will be, you know, good for a podcast later. But I believe that's not the way to do it. So if I were to investigate cryptids, not only would it be entertaining, but I would come at this from just a different, you know, a different look. And I'm not saying that I am here to disprove or prove. That's really not the goal. The goal is to gather the evidence and then to give it to you and say, what do you think about it? This is what I found. Recently, yesterday, I put out a bit of a information hit piece on myself, I guess you could say, for flat earth or hollow earth theory. Now, I did this because I get so many people who believe in flat earth, and that's fine if you do. I don't care. I believe the fact that I'm even having to talk about this is ridiculous, and it is off topic, but there are so many people who believe in flat earth that it's worth taking the time to go through the evidence. I'm not here to prove, I'm not here to disprove. I'm here to gather the evidence, be objectively reasonable, and it is what it is. You either like it or you don't. I either stepped on your toes and hurt your feelings, or I didn't. You know, that's really not my prerogative. I really don't care. However, let's consider this. Let's consider the fact that if you are going to get onto the comment section of the YouTube channels that many people visit, and you're going to hijack the comment section and make everything about the relatable source of information that we've gone over be only exclusively about flat Earth, well, now we got problems. And that means we need to address it. So, on behalf of the flat earthers, and on behalf of those of you who care, don't care, doesn't matter, it's my show, I'll cover what I want. I am going to cover this. I'll get down to the nitty gritty. I'm not going to be taking laser measurements over the earth and looking at all these different people's YouTube channels. I hate it when people say that, hey, look at this guy's YouTube channel. Look at this guy's YouTube channel. Look, I know people. I've known people who've been in space, astronauts. I know people from NASA. I know people from freaking Space Force, Air Force, you know, amateur astronomers. And, you know, we can prove what we can see with technology. Now, there's some people who say, well, all these things were fake. The moon landing was fake. Maybe it was in the beginning. The goal was to beat the Russians. So maybe it was staged in the beginning to fool the world, to slow down the rocket creation timeline that we were in. Maybe there's validity there. I don't know, but I'm not going to say it's not. However, what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to go completely occultic and make everything about the flat earth theory. And once again, that's my only problem with the whole incident, with the whole, how would you say this? The topic. I think the earth is round. I think the earth is a globe. I think we could have a hollow earth. Not to the extent that many people have talked about. I don't believe that you can fly over one side of the world and there's just this giant 1,000-mile hole. I've flown around the world I don't know how many different times. I've never seen that. Of course, I know what the flat earther is. I'm flying this direction. But look, this is just my opinion, okay? You're entitled to your opinion. I'm entitled to mine. I always ask people, if you're going to give me something, come at it with data. I want to see the information. I want to see your information. Not someone else's information that's regurgitated on a YouTube channel. Those, just because those people are there does not mean it's real. Does not mean that it has been validated within the scientific community. And even if there are, you have to understand that within the scientific community, there are fringe groups. So, I mean, the scientists are always arguing back and forth. And every 50 years, some new theory has been disproved. But I'm also going to say that the government lies to you quite a bit, has lied to you for a very long time, and continues to, and will continue to, and will hide things, and will make up false flags. So, what a conundrum. We have many different elements, and it could make for a fun story. So why not? That's what we'll be working on for the next couple of days. But for right now, let's talk about cryptids. From my perspective, before talking about cryptids, we must identify what a credible witness is. Now, as a former law enforcement officer, I look at these certain elements for witness credibility and report writing techniques. And I say that because, as a fan of Bigfoot and Loch Ness and all the little monsters running around terrorizing everybody, I do take issue with the way these things are done. I don't think they're taken seriously. And even so, I don't think they're done very well. I think many of the investigators do their best, and it's not that great. That's my personal opinion. Not all. Some are very well done. Some are very professional, and I appreciate the professionalism, but very few, and I mean very, very few, are professional at this. A lot of them, they walk out into the woods, and every knock on a tree is a tree knock from Bigfoot. And what are you going to do whenever you find Bigfoot, says X, Y, and Z specialist Bigfoot research hunter? Well, I'm going to go and see the brother of the woods and give him a great big old hug. I just want to give him a great big old hug. And I sit back and I laugh. As a hunter, I'm not going to go find a bear and give the bear a great big old hug. But yet, at the same time, we're talking about a creature the size of a grizzly bear, probably the same strength relatively, faster. Oh, by the way, it's omnivorous. What does that mean? That means it eats meat. Why do I know this? Because I watch too many of these shows. So according to the experts, Bigfoot can run like 30 or 45 miles an hour. And they follow the herds of deer and elk. And they will run down a deer, catch it, break its legs, rip its head off, and eat it. And then those same people will go into the woods with no weapons at all, with the outlook of, I can't wait to document the thing that can run down a freaking white-tailed deer and rip it in half and eat it and give it a great big old hug. Just supplement the word Bigfoot with Kodiak grizzly. And tell me if you're going to go on that same expedition without a gun. That's my mindset. That's how I would treat an investigation properly. Once again, there's probably some other little techniques that I would use that a lot of these other guys don't. And we may do that one day. I'm already invited now to go into Oklahoma on a Bigfoot expedition. We'll see how that pans out. But first, what is the definition of witness testimony? And why is this so important? Well, first off, a witness is a person who has either seen or has heard the crime take place, or may have important information about a crime or about a victim of a crime. And during a courtroom scene, both the defense and the prosecutor can call upon witnesses to testify or tell what they know about the incident. And a lot of times the testimony will be the thing brought up and, hey, do you remember all this? Are you writing it? And they will work you over on your own testimony. So things that we like to have included in a witness testimony to give credibility are witnesses' own personal details of the incident, giving context to the reported situation with factual accounts of what occurred, asking for estimates of times and dates, weather, day or night, was the witness on medication, or was any illegal narcotics or drinking alcohol during the time of the incident. Sometimes we ask for the witnesses to draw a diagram of what they saw about the situation, something that can also help to generate the recall of the memory. Why do we ask for weather? Well, and I'll explain this a little bit later as well, is with weather, depending on how far out you are when you see Loch Ness, the fog, the morning dew, light rain, heavy rain, all those things can obscure vision. So that's why we want to ask, what did you see? How was it moving? What time of day was it? You know, were you drinking? Were you on any type of medication that can alter your vision or your state of mind? Was it raining? Something that could obscure the direction of movement or the outline of the creature. I would have to ask, are these types of questions being asked during these investigations with these cryptid hunters, going out and looking for the little monsters and the Loch Nesses and Bigfoots? From what I have seen quite a few times, I don't think so. I think the Skinwalker Ranch TV show that's on the History Channel is probably one of the best, well-documented, scientific experiments about cryptids, about paranormal stuff. And I think it is a good base for other investigators who want to get into this, or even yourself if you want to get into this. Look at the way that they do this research on Skinwalker Ranch and stay within those scientific parameters. If you stay within those parameters, you can't go wrong. If you start pulling out a Ouija board, trying to summon something, and they actually tried that to an extent out there at Skinwalker Ranch. They actually had some rabbi who came out there. He's on Ancient Aliens all the time, but he came out and he did a blessing ceremony based off of the Old Testament, some sort of blessing. I don't know. And it was to create a safe space for whatever spirits are out and about. Now then, as a Christian, I would have to say that if you are going to go ghost hunting, you may want to check with the Lord first. And if you're going to go finding things, you may want to make sure that what you're doing is not in the realms of communication. With ghost hunting, I used to really like to watch Ghost Adventures. I have since stopped because they have gone very off the beaten path. I like to watch scientific exploration, all right? I've always loved to watch that. And so anytime I get the chance to see what type of equipment is being used, which is the thing that drew me originally to the paranormal ghost hunter world, and I've never done anything like that, by the way, and I don't plan on it. But I like seeing the type of equipment that they use, because a lot of times these guys create their own equipment. They're very, very good equipment, and the technology is you know, by themselves. No one else has it except for these guys. One of them is the SLS, I think, camera, and it picks up invisible objects that are moving, and then it maps it out in a stick figure-like diagram on a screen, which is absolutely creepy. But could I use that? Let's say if I went to a giant's tomb, or if I went to some sort of a megalithic area, and I am testing for frequencies, I am testing for electromagnetic interference, the things that you will find on Skinwalker Ranch, and then you use something like that SLS camera and you capture an entity. Now, once again, this is for scientific purposes, and I think that's all right. That's my personal opinion. But the moment you go to start to talk to it and communicate with it, well, God kind of strictly forbids us from necromancy and strictly forbids us from talking with these type of entities. We don't want to pierce that veil, because then you create a conduit between yourself and whatever the hell it is that you're talking to. Either you think it's like a little girl, or, you know, it is whatever you think it is. But typically, I'm going to go ahead and say it's not there for your benefit. Now, to segue for a second, I knew guys who were stationed up in Minot, North Dakota on the Air Force's nuclear base. And these guys were the quick reaction force for the nuclear base. And the stories are fantastic that we used to get from these guys. One of the stories, and it's very comical, I will allow him to remain nameless, but he was the only black guy of the entire security group, and they would go out by themselves in a truck, or sometime by twos, and they'd have to drive from where they're stationed, I don't know how many miles, but a long time, and to get to the nuclear silo. And they had to pass an old abandoned like mining town. So this guy, as he's driving through, drives through, sees nothing, goes through the town, sees nothing, goes to the silo, checks in, comes back. And as he's coming back, he sees what he told me was a probably 6 or 7 year old young white girl and some sort of like a blue dress from like the, I don't know, the 20s or 30s. And it was very comical what he told me next, because I asked, well, what did you do when you saw this? He's like, well, first off, ain't supposed to be no little white girl out in the middle of nowhere in North Dakota during a winter storm. So I hit the gas. I said, what do you mean you hit the gas? You charged at the ghost? He's like, absolutely. I don't know why you're out there. I know that that's not normal. And I know that I don't believe in ghosts. So whatever that is demonic, and I'm going through it. I said, okay, well, bravo, good on you. That's probably the best call. And I mean, and you got to understand where they're at. There is no civilians out there. So there shouldn't have been, in a snowstorm in Minot, North Dakota, where it can get well below freezing, for a little girl in a summer dress to be out there. That would be an oddity to see. So, you know, documenting that, it's something that I think it's worth going through and talking about to people who have had, you know, people see stuff. And I'm never going to say that you didn't see something. I just want it explained in the way that I know how to make a report so that I can log it. That's it. I really don't care what the discourse is after that. I just, you know, that's my mindset of it. When law enforcement officers are witnesses, and there are plenty of accounts of law enforcement officers being witnesses to UFO sightings, Bigfoot sightings. We actually had representative from Oklahoma, J.J. Holbrook. He was on here, and he was talking about how he knew a guy who came forward and talked about his Bigfoot encounter. And then, once again, in law enforcement, it's taboo to talk about stuff like that. You get pinned as being a crazy guy, and you don't want to be the crazy guy. So, you know, a lot of people will see stuff, and they'll never report it. They'll never talk about it. And a lot of times, they'll question their own sanity if they saw what they saw. But as law enforcement officers, for witnesses, we are expected to be fair, to be objectively reasonable, impartial throughout all of our interactions and investigations, especially while you're being questioned in court. So we are expected to have a value for truth above any desire to see a particular side prevail on any type of court case. We just want the truth, and that's it. We will get questioned by judges, by juries, by all the other parties. And we're expected to give facts and only facts. We're expected to be impartial and refrain from using any type of exaggeration. Now, when law enforcement writes up a use of force report, especially, we have to understand that all accounts must be taken. Law enforcement officers are meant to be impartial at all time. Like I said, we're meant to refrain from exaggeration. When we write up a use of force report, I would ask officers, because I was a use of force instructor, so obviously I helped out with report writing, and I would ask officers to give me as much information as possible. I would ask them, you know, whether the encounter was lethal or less lethal, no matter what it was, to give me every bit of information, what you saw, what you feel, what you know to be true during the time. And then we try to get that credibility by getting other supplemental reports from any other officers that were there. That would be their witness testimony, or any witnesses, civilian-wise, who also saw any type of incident that the officer was happened to have been occurred in. During a lethal use of force, I mean, officers are given up to 3 days or more, depending on the incident, to make notes as things are being recalled, because you have audio and you have visual exclusion. So during an incident, you'll get tunnel vision. You don't see anything else around you. You don't hear a bunch of different things, because everything is focused on the incident. Wouldn't we say that that would also apply to many of the witnesses who see Bigfoot rampaging through their backyard or chasing them. Or the goat man that's on the Denton, Texas bridge chasing them across the bridge. I think if we're going to give validation to people, then maybe one of the better ways to come at getting this approach of testimony would be to approach it the same way we would a crime scene or any type of interaction that law enforcement would take. Just to take all the partiality out of this, let's just stick to the facts as we know it. I think that's one of the better ways to do this type of report. And once again, you know, these reports can still change later due to the memory recall. So you could write something down and, you know, 3 or 4 days, a week go by and you remember something else. And then you would write that down as well and add it to your report. You know, law enforcement does this all the time, updating reports. We ask officers to recall things that I don't believe the average witness who sees a cryptid is asked to recall. Let me give you an example. We ask officers to recall why they were sent to a situation, what we would say a call. Why were you sent on the call? What did they first see when they arrived on scene? What was the description of the subject or the subjects? Was it day or was it night? What was the weather like? Because of heavy fog or rain, which can obscure the vision from a distance and the interaction with the subject when you first came on the scene, what was the subject doing? All right. Was there a threat that was presented to the officer by the subject? Were there efforts made to de-escalate the situation prior to the use of force, or was it able to not be de-escalated and you just immediately had to go hands-on? If so, why? So we asked them to constantly explain things. Was there a threat that was presented to the officer by the subject? Were there efforts made to de-escalate the situation? Was it feasible to give a warning? You know, a lot of times they ask us to give warnings first, but in a deadly encounter, you may not be able to have the ability to give that verbal warning, so you just had to take the shot or you just had to tackle the guy or gal to the ground, and a warning wasn't feasible. If it was given, write it down. If not, why wasn't it? So explain the scenario as to why you couldn't even give a warning when feasible. What type of force was used? And did the subject comply with the commands of the officers? Were there any injuries sustained by the subject or by the officer? Was it recorded by a hospital? If so, what time did you arrive? When did you arrive at the jail or the booking station? How many miles was the trip from the incident where they were placed under arrest and reported in that they were placed under arrest from the time that you had to go to the jail? All that is documented. This is my beginning mileage. This is my ending mileage. And if there's a gap in time, because what prosecutors will do is they will go and say, okay, from right here on Google Maps to this jail, it's 2 miles away. Why? And I know it's 2 miles away, and you, let's just say, for brevity's sake, your car had 100 miles on the odometer, and it was 110 miles at the end. Where did you go? Because it only should have taken you 2 miles. Did you go for a trip around the city? You know, these are the types of questions, right? When you go to ask people these type of questions, what did you see? How big was it? What noise was it making? One of the things that I always, and I've asked people this question who've told me about their encounters, and I want to say this as something that's I find interesting. I have not to date had one person tell me that one cryptid that they saw had red glowing eyes. Not one. And I mean this honestly, be honest. If it had red glowing eyes, that's not a known animal, period. Even if you know, they have bioluminescence and fish and insects and, you know, stuff way down at the deeper part of the oceans and in caves. I get that. But for a hominid like a Bigfoot, to always have these red glowing eyes or these red and yellow glowing eyes, I believe to be a bit exaggerated. Can you see eye shine on animals? You know, cats, dogs, deer? Yes, you'll see eye shine. A lot of times it's yellow or it's green. I don't see red. So, you know, and I'm sure somebody in the comic section is going to tell me their encounter with big hairy things with, you know, red glowing eyes, and it just doesn't make sense to me because I've never seen it and I've hunted my entire life. And by that, I don't mean I sat in a deer stand on my ass my entire life. I actually went out and hunted. I actually got into the woods as many times as possible, hundreds and hundreds of times. So I've never encountered an animal like that. I've used night vision in other parts of the world, and I've never seen anything like that. And here in the States, as a law enforcement professional, still have never seen anything like that. But if you look at these TV shows, they always have to exaggerate what it is. And I want to say, because it's a TV show and it's out there for entertainment, the exaggeration takes away from the actual facts of the case. Which is why law enforcement, they always tell you, facts. I want you to tell me facts. Just the facts of what happened. Not a story. You know, I just want to know what happened, and that's it. Shut up. Don't say anything else, and don't add to. But why aren't people who see these creatures, why aren't they taking the task of the way law enforcement is? You would think that the independent researchers, that the critics of academia, especially in the science field, or biologists, would want to be there getting this witness testimony and gathering that data. But they don't. A lot of the problem is, some of these people believe that everything has been explored. There's nothing new under the sun. And that all these accounts that are seen by people is just BS. I don't think that's true. I believe people are seeing something on nearly every continent, in every country, there is some sort of a Bigfoot or a chupacabra or a lake monster. So if we see this phenomena all around the world, there has to be something to it. Could it be Gigantopithecus? I don't think so. I personally don't believe it's an ape that lived hundreds of thousands of years ago. I could be wrong at the same time, all right? We didn't find a certain species of gorillas that lived in the jungles, I believe, in Africa until like the 1800s. So, you know, it's quite a long period of time to not explore and to write into academic research where those animals came from. So, you know, there's new discoveries all the time of new species in the jungles or new species that are in our oceans and seas. So I don't think you can just write out that there's nothing that we haven't explored yet. I was watching a documentary of one of the deepest caves in the world. And it's on National Geographic. And this cave is 11 kilometers deep. It takes 7 days to journey from the mouth of the cave to the very bottom part of the cave. And I believe they're at like 9 or 10 different base camps along the way to set up that logistical train. And I mean, they're not just walking. I mean, they are climbing rope. They are squeezing through gaps of rock this thick. It's incredible. And the cave continues to go further deep. So if we're only just now penetrating to that level of the darkness in the caves, we haven't explored the oceans. There is still quite a bit of the Amazon rainforest that's unexplored. And other rainforests that are in jungles that are unexplored. So I believe there are things out there. I believe whatever it was that created them, a lot of these creatures are still there. I also believe a lot of it's made up. I believe a lot of people make stuff up so they get their 5 minutes of fame. They get their YouTube comment section replies, and it's all vanity. I think a lot of it is vanity and chasing after the wind. That's my personal belief. I'm not going to discount people's beliefs. Like I said, if you want that encounter with me, understand, I'm going to ask you questions. And you're either going to provide them, or you're going to make stuff up. That just is what it is. And just understand that even with all the training that law enforcement gets, with the report writing, you know, techniques and training, we still mess it up. Law enforcement still messes it up. Law enforcement hides some of the things that they're supposed to write down, and then it comes out later. And, you know, within law enforcement, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble, especially if you lie on a report and it goes to court. I mean, consider your career over. You're going to be giglioed. Giglioed is whenever you're found to not be a credible witness anymore to reporting a crime. And if they prove that you can lie once, they won't let you do it again. Once you get giglioed, done with. You're out of there. You are no longer in law enforcement. What other tools are used for gathering intelligence, though? So for all you would-be investigators that are out there who want to go out into your backyard and, you know, talk to your friends who've seen Bigfoot or werewolf or chupacabra or whatever it is, understand that when you go to gather information, you just have to gather whatever it is that you're being given. You disseminate it later, but you disseminate it and you tear it apart once you start getting so much data. And, you know, when you start getting a heavy amount of collective stuff that is similar, okay, they're all 8 foot tall, they're all hairy, you know, no one has reported red glowing eyes yet. You know, I would scratch that one off, red glowing eyes. And honestly, it sounds silly, and I know it's silly for me to bring this up, but if you're going to do the research, do it the right way, right? Take your camera. Take a ruler, you know, take some casting material. If you find something, document it, log it. See if you can bring it to a university or a college and have somebody check it out for you. You never know. You may be the one to actually finally catch the pixelated monster called Bigfoot and his hair that's left everywhere. I will say this. There's a Finding Bigfoot TV show that I watch on Discovery Channel. It's very entertaining, and the reason why I like it is there's a lady on there. She's one of the leading primatologists in the world. I believe she actually helped uncover a new species of gorilla. I may be mistaken when I say that, but I believe she's done something along that level. And she comes at this with the mindset to disprove, but she comes at it with her knowledge of how to communicate with primates. And if Bigfoot is a primate, she would be the person in the field. And she has scientific equipment. She's taking evaluations and assessments of the areas, of the terrain, of the food that would be available to a creature of that size. And I do appreciate that. And then they pair her up with the freaking weird guy that believes every single thing under the sun about Bigfoot and can regurgitate it. That's his life as Bigfoot. They can float in the sky. They can, you know, travel back and forth through portals. They have little creatures that scamper after them to pick up the droppings of the Bigfoot. And then you have, you know, once again, understand who is a credible witness here. Then you have lore from Native American tales about Bigfoot or about other cryptids that are out there. And there are, man, there are documentations, cave drawings of giants, all this type of stuff. It's been around for a long time. Researchers go out and they look at it. I want to go out and look at it. There's a story there that's missing. Part of the reason why our expedition crew, part of the reasons why we're going to caves right now is to look for giants. It just is what it is. We want to go out there looking for the skeletal remains of giants. We're not going to find anything alive. Just, I'll go ahead and throw that one out there. Better not. That would suck. But and me and Timothy Alberino talked about this with Bigfoot. No one that goes out looking for Bigfoot finds Bigfoot. Just is what it is. You always find Bigfoot whenever you're just having a normal, average, everyday interaction with nature. And then boom, Bigfoot. So, my goal with this is to try and find the evidence of tools, of chambers, of tombs, of scribblings on the wall that you only found because you went so many miles deep into the cave. Like people have seen with some of the recent exploration stuff that we put out there. Some of these caves are quite tricky to get into. And I'll have you know, and I was told by our friend Brent, who is a professional caver. That's what this man does. And that's Brent Height of Brent Height Outdoors, by the way. And the average cougar, mountain lion, bear, wolf, they are typically from the beginning of the cave to about 30 feet, maybe further back into the cave. But they don't go so far into the back of the cave where you don't have light. And it doesn't take long to be inside a cave to where you don't have any light now. And I mean, if you wore night vision, it's not going to work. You have no ambient light source for the IR illuminator. So, you have to have a flashlight or you have to have some sort of a source of light, either a torch. I don't know what it is. You ain't going to go back in there and see anything without a flashlight, period. We tried it. We tested that out. So, in my mind, I now am building up a case in my head. Okay, well, if there was going to be a civilization of creatures, 8 foot tall, 7.5 to 8 foot tall, where are they going to go at and why would they be in these caves? Because most of the caves we got into, you had to duck your head or crawl on your hands and knees to get way back into. And I just don't believe those creatures are going to take that time to get into these caves. Now, I'm not saying that they wouldn't. I might be wrong. Hell, we may find a whole graveyard filled full of them, like an elephant graveyard way in the back of a cave. But I just don't believe that. But in certain parts around the world, like in South America, the documentation of giants in the caves were, right there in a shelter style cave within the mouth of the cave was the burial sites. And two different places that we went to while looking at caves in Arkansas, there were burial mounds right there within the cave, within the mouth of the cave. As far back as the sunlight will penetrate, that's about how far back the people would go. So I believe the giants, if they were in these caves, were probably doing the same thing. Now, at the same time, we don't know what type of technology that they had. They could have had an advanced technology. We know that they had advanced mathematics. So, we do our best to uncover as much as possible. But, this is the hard part, is you have to get out and do it. You have to get out, you got to research it yourself. You got to figure out what in the hell it is that you're going to do and how you're going to start it, and then left foot, right foot, repeat. Keep moving forward in your investigation. And once again, just a little tool for people: the with gathering intelligence, the process consists of identifying, prioritizing, validating intelligence and the requirements that you have. Like, this is the type of intelligence I need, is based off these requirements. All right. I want to get a description of the creature. What did it sound like? You know, I don't, my intelligence requirements for Bigfoot wouldn't be, well, I heard a knock in the woods and then a lady scream. Okay. Well, maybe something ran into a tree and you heard a lady scream, or you heard a cougar scream or a bobcat scream. All right. But you need to set parameters of what your intelligence is that you're trying to find. You'd want to make sure that you can translate those requirements back and forth and not get yourself confused and bogged down in information. And you want those requirements to translate over to something that is an observable action. So I can gather data and I can say, okay, I expect to see this smell, these footprints to be in this area. So now that's my mission objective. And these are the actions I'm taking to go out and verify if I can at least find one of these parameters on my list. You need to be preparing information collection plans. So that would be going out and talking with people, Googling on the old Google machine to see if there's been any witness testimony about a certain area. You know, even some things that are good things for your research, go talk to a scientist every now and then about a geological formation. If you think it's a megalithic formation, take a picture of it, go talk to a geologist. Probably 9 times out of 10, it's not. But let the experts go out there and identify it. And, you know, you got to understand, this world is very biased within the scientific community. They're going to tell you things based off their biased view. And every now and then you'll have that one guy who goes, you know, man, I think there's more to this story than what we were told in the universities. That's the guy you need to look for. That's the Indiana Jones that you need to go and find. Understand that you may have to issue requests for information, which is reaching out to people. So, you know, have a nice addressed email and letterhead. Hey, this is me. This is what I'm doing. You know, don't just show up to people's doorsteps asking questions. You know, be professional about it. And a lot of times, that professionalism carries over and people respect that. And once you get information, if you're going to disseminate your evidence and what you have found, make sure that you are continuously monitoring all the availability of the data that's being collected as it's coming in. Because you may disseminate information and then it comes out, oops, that was not real. Let me correct it on the record. Or, hey, we now have more intelligence about this scenario, about this creature, and let me fill you in the next new levels of data that we've received. And by data, obviously, what I'm talking about is pictures, videos, witness testimony, and then trying to validate that evidence. There's a lot going on in the United States when it comes to cryptids. And I am fascinated with cryptids. I have always been. And I finally get to be a kid again, so I'm going to start exploring it. Let's talk about lake monsters real quick and where all the lake monsters are. You may or may not know this, but enjoy. Nebraska, you have the Alkali Lake Monster. In Georgia, you have the Lake Monster. Both of these are about 30 to 40 foot long, and the one in Nebraska is considered to be alligator-like with rough grayish-brown skin and a horn-like appendage located between its eyes and nostrils. The one that's in Georgia is said to be snake-like, with flippers like a seal. Then you have the Mimalus Lake in Oregon. That's the Amahuluk. It's a serpentine creature with horns. Fool Lake in Indiana, you have the Beast of Busco, or the Oscar Turtle, which is supposed to be a giant snapping turtle. And that was, that testimony for that sighting was back in 1898 and all the way through 1948. If you've ever seen a leatherback sea turtle or a alligator snapping turtle, they are gigantic creatures. Can they be misidentified? Yes. Can people exaggerate what they see? Yes. All you hunters out there, how many times have you had this conversation with people? You know, the deer that your buddy saw and missed, his horns was this big. You know, the horns are always bigger. And then finally, when someone kills the deer, it's a little basket rack. And you know who you are if you make up that story. Lake Erie, this is in Ohio. You have Bessie. It's a snake-like creature, 30 to 40 feet long. So once again, here's a data point. In Nebraska, Oregon, Indiana, Georgia, and Ohio, thus far, all of these creatures are 30 to 40 feet long. They're all serpentine or snake-like, except for the one in Indiana, that's the snapping turtle. In the Black River of New York, you have the Black River Monster, a dark-colored serpentine body with flippers and large bulging eyes. That was seen in 1951. In Lake Dillon, Colorado, you have Blue Dilly, the manta ray-like creature. Now, a manta ray, it's a very large species of the ray family, and they're about 23 feet in width. Some of them are just gigantic creatures. If you saw something like that, you're probably not going to forget it. But could it be misidentified? Now, that creature is a very specific shape. It's a flying boomerang underwater, and the ends of the boomerang are the fins. Now, I've seen them when I was stationed in Hawaii, when we used to do a lot of diving, and we used to do a lot of spear fishing, and seen them way out in the distance. Huge creatures, majestical looking. I would not misidentify that if I saw that in a lake. But at the same time, let's ask the question. Assuming that you are diving in a lake, you know, I mean, was the lake clear? Was it a muddy watered lake? I grew up on muddy water lakes my whole life. You didn't see the alligator until he was too close. Same with the damn snake that always tried to get on your boat. So, you know, depending on the waters, you know, try to identify who is a credible witness that also can be based off of the scenario of the area that you're in. Wisconsin, you have the bozo, which is a serpentine creature, sometimes taken for a log until it moves. And this was back in 1860 when it was first documented. Said to play pranks such as chasing boats and tickling bathers' feet. You have the Brazano dragon, and this was out in documented in Russia. And here's another couple in Russia. Saka, Russia. You have the Labinker devil, possibly 26 feet long serpentine. Once again, serpentine, 20 feet long, 26 feet long, 30 feet long, 40 feet long. I would want to say that, you know, those measurements could probably be 5 to 10 feet inaccurate or larger based off of testimony and how far away somebody was. In Australia, you have the bunyip. It's variously described as having a round head, an elongated neck, and a body resembling that of an ox, a hippopotamus, or a manatee. And that's in Victoria, Australia. And it's seen in swamps and billabongs and creeks and riverbeds and waterholes. Could that just be a unknown mammalian, aquatic mammalian species, possibly. Lake Champlain is a good one for most people. You have Champ of Lake Champlain. That's a reptilian creature with slimy gray skin, 20 to 40 feet long, with a long neck, horse-like head, and four flippers. You have the Charles Mill Lake in Ohio, and that's the Charles Mill Lake Monster, a armless reptilian with luminous green skin and glowing green eyes, documented from 1959 to 1963. Chesapeake Bay. So that would be Maryland, Virginia, and Delaware. You have Chessie, which is their river monster. It's a dark-colored, snake-like body with flippers. Crescent Lake in Canada. You have Cressy, which is an eel-like lake monster that was documented in the 1950s. Now, here's a fun one. Devil's Lake, Wisconsin. You have the Devil's Lake Monster, which is a freshwater octopus, a gigantic freshwater kraken-like octopus. Lake Tota in Colombia, South America. You have the devil whale, or the monster of Lake Tota, a huge black fish bigger than a whale with the head of a bull, seen in 1652. Lake Elsinore, California, USA. You have Elsie, or also known as Hamlet, or Lake Elsinore Monster, a cross between a plesiosaur and a sea serpent, documented in 1884 all the way to 1994. The Flathead Lake Monster in Montana, a 20 to 40 foot long eel-like creature, round. Its color is between brown to blue and black. Possesses steel black eyes and undulating hips, or a large sized fish from 6 to 10 feet long. So those are two different creatures right there. All right. Once again, the common nature of most of these aquatic creatures is they're serpentine, plesiosaur looking, 20 to 40 feet long. And then you have another witness who will say, well, what I saw was a gigantic fish, 6 to 10 feet long. Here we go. Lake Ontario. I can't even pronounce this word, so I'm not going to. A dragon that dwells in rivers and lakes of Canada, especially Lake Ontario. This dragon flies on a trail of fire and can also spew fire. And that's a Seneca legend. So that's a Native American legend. Then you also have Lake Thunderbird, Lake Ulaga, and Lake Tenkiller, which is in Oklahoma. Here we go again. The giant freshwater octopus, a 20-foot-long giant octopus with reddish-brown and a leathery skin. I think if I had to choose between the plesiosaur and the octopus, I would go with the plesiosaur. If you've ever seen an octopus eat something, that's terrifying. That's not the way I want to die. Sweden. Over there in Europe, you have Gritti, which is a long, serpentine, and potentially horned animal, seen in the 1980s. Harrington Lake in Kentucky. You have Harry, or the eel pig, roughly 15 feet long, with a body like that of an eel and a skin tone pattern reminiscent of a speckled fish. It is said to be as fast as a boat at times and also possess a stubby pig-like snout and a somewhat curly tail, seen in 1925 to 1972. That's an interesting matchup of animals. Here we go. New South Wales and Australia, the Hawkesbury River Monster. 25 to 30 feet long, grayish fish-like plesiosaur with a snake-like head. Lake Hodges in California. You have Hodgy, plesiosaur or Loch Ness monster-like creature. Wisconsin. This is the Devil's Lake. The Hookawa, a long neck and small-headed plesiosaur. And it, you know, it keeps going on and on. I mean, we got Lake Simcoe, Ontario, the Iwama Lake in Alaska. I probably butchered that word. This is a monstrous fish with blunt heads, used to smash through boat bottoms, said to resemble a barracuda, silvery in color with black stripes. First reported by the Aleut people. And, you know, you get these reports all across North America, Japan, Africa. As you see, you know, as we're going down the list, let me see here. In North Korea, they even have one. The Lake Tianchi Monster, a large turtle-like animal or a large black creature, some 20 to 30 meters long, with a small head shaped like that of a horse. You start to see how many of these creatures seem to be very similar in length, in at least that of the way their heads are shaped. And then you have the Lake Worth Monster, which is right here next to me near Fort Worth, and that's in Texas. You have the Fishy Man Goat, the Lake Worth Monster. A humanoid torso with goat legs covered in white fur and scales, first seen in 1969 and was scaring the hell out of kids and beachgoers. So gather the evidence and pursue it. Just be cautious of what you pursue. A lot of people like to lead you astray with their commentary, and you'll know those people when you come across them. But I think this is something good to get into for people. You know, make an adventure out of it if you have to. That'd be a cool vacation. Stop wasting your money at Pedophile Island and Disneyland and start going and experiencing the woodlands of America, exploring, you know, the lake monsters of America, and just go and document it. If anything else, bring the kids along. You should have a lot of fun with that. There are a lot of cryptids that are out there, even some that are documented by the government. The Bureau of Land Management actually updated this October 29th of 2002 on their website, blm.gov, that the General Land Office Record of the Week showcases the mysterious realm of North American cryptids in a collaborative effort by the ROTW team, Step Inside If You Dare. The word cryptid refers to a creature that is believed to exist without significant proof. This term has been widely used since the early 1980s, but sightings and claims of the unnatural have haunted the globe for centuries. The ROTW focuses on some favorite cryptids one might find lurking in the forest and waters of North America, maybe even on Bureau of Land Management land. Now, I know some people in the government, Corps of Engineers, Bureau of Land Management, who have had conversations with people that, you know, when people see something, people talk, right? Especially if it's a monster. Everybody's got to make fun of you. And there was a story that I was told about Army Corps of Engineers. I think they're along the Mississippi River. And while they're out there, they are being harassed by unseen force, having rocks thrown at them, being disrupted while they were working, had their trucks ransacked to the point that they thought it may have been criminal activity. And then they would smell a pungent skunk-like odor. They would start to have reports of seeing a large furry creature always off in the distance, monitoring what they were doing with working alongside the river. These were some of the reports of Bigfoot, some of the first reports from government employees that I ever heard. I didn't know how to take it. This, you know, these reports came from guys who've been around for a while. One of the guys recalled something that was very similar to what I just said that happened in the 1980s. For several weeks, they had this encounter. So, are people seeing something? Absolutely. Do they know what they're seeing all the time? Not all the time. One of my problems with cryptids, especially with Bigfoot, is that when people try to get photographic evidence, it's always blurry. Unless it's just a permanently blurred creature. It's in a state of pixelation. I've heard that Bigfoot is so smart that Bigfoot can use extremely low frequency to target people, to drive them crazy, or to put thoughts in their heads. Missing 411 actually did a very good job of talking about a little girl who was drawn out from her home to the tree line by a family of Bigfoots that were talking to her with telekinesis. Is it true? I don't know. I am of the opinion until I see it, I touch it, or I interview it, I'll jot it down. I'll say, okay, it could happen, but I'm not going to give it 100% validity and just believe everything I'm told. I think most of you are probably like that. You know, how many times have your kids seen something out in the woods and you automatically go, okay, all right, I know you're just, you know, we're making stuff up for fairy tale plausibilities now. And sometimes kids see stuff. And at the same time, don't always discourage the kids not to admit what they see or, you know, not believe them. There are plenty of criminal cases where kids were used as testimony. The kids' testimony were used for murder cases, kidnapping cases, rapes, sexual molestations. So a child's, you know, witness account shouldn't always just be discredited, especially by the parents. Pay attention to your kids. Before we go, I want to go over some of the well-known cryptids in America. These are the monsters of America. Should give you a good laugh. Alkali Lake Monster, a 40 feet long horned reptile said to inhabit Nebraska's Walgreen Lake. Its favorite treat, livestock and fishermen, and stinks to high heaven. Number two, the Altamaha Monster, a 30-foot-long creature navigating the mouth of Georgia's Altamaha River with seal-like movements blending into its surroundings thanks to its green skin. Possible footage of the monster is on the internet. Bear Lake Monster, number three. Although the person who first reported the monster of Bear Lake on the Utah-Idaho border later admitted it was a wonderful first-class lie, his tail has continued to generate numerous sightings, turning the 30-foot water devil into a modest tourist attraction. Good old American folklore. The Beast of Busco, number four, 1949 inhabitants of Churubusco, Indiana, reported seeing a giant snapping turtle. We've already gone over this one. Bessie, Loch Ness has a Nessie, well, Lake Erie has a Bessie, a snake-like aquatic reptile between 30 and 40 feet long, seen as far back, documented to have been seen as far back as 1739. And we have Bigfoot, perhaps America's most famous cryptid, a large hairy ape man, seen a lot in the forests of the Pacific Northwest, very big with American folklore and pop culture and Native American lore, which, once again, one of the things that we're doing on our expedition is if we're going to find Bigfoot, if we're going to find giants, I think it may add to the validity of Native American lore, which I add a lot of validity to be honest with you. Number seven, Big Bird, a giant ape-faced bird that terrorized the Rio Grande Valley. First spotted in 1976, it has blood-red eyes and a 12-foot wingspan. After a few months, the monster disappeared as mysteriously as it emerged. Some people thought that potentially it could have been a stork from Central America. Number eight, Caddy. Named after the Cadboro Bay in British Columbia, Caddy is a sea monster said to frequent the coasts of Washington and Oregon. Number nine, Cassie. Maine and Oregon both have a Portland and also a sea monster. The Pine Tree State's Casco Bay is home to Cassie, a sea serpent where the reports from as early as 1751 documented this sea creature, but it has been documented in the last couple of decades. Chessie, that's the sea monster of Chesapeake Bay, reportedly 25 to 40 feet long. Between the 1970s and 1980s, it was reported, and most recently in 2014. You have Champ of Lake Champlain. That's another Nessie-like creature. Chupacabra, here we go. The original sighting of Chupacabra, Spanish for goat sucker, was in the mid-1990s in Puerto Rico and apparently influenced by a creature in the sci-fi movies Species. A rash of sightings and mutilated goats in northern Mexico and the southern U.S. has been linked to many dogs or to mangy dogs, yet the legend lives on, and reports were even wrote down in the Huffington Post about Chupacabra. Number 13, Flathead Lake Monster. It's a monster that lives in Montana's Flathead Lake, and it's another version of Nessie. Number 14, the Honey Island Swamp Monster. 7 feet tall, with gray hair, red eyes, and a foul smell, the monster of Honey Island Swamp, Louisiana, is a hominid cryptid seen since 1963, but also linked to older Native American myths. Number 16, the Jersey Devil. Winged and hoofed, the Jersey Devil would probably look like a devil if it could be coaxed out of its lair in New Jersey's Pine Barrens. Quick story. I was stationed in New Jersey when I first joined DHS. And I was going to the northeastern coast of New Jersey because I was stationed in Camden. And I'm heading up to check on some sort of a report. I can't remember what the hell I was doing. All I remember is that it was snowing. It was like Snowmageddon year. It was like 2013. And as I'm driving, I'm in a marked police vehicle. And I'm driving through the Pine Barrens at like 20, 30 miles an hour. Very, very slow. Visibility was horrible. As I'm driving, a lady appears on the side of the road out by her mailbox, waving me down. So being the good Samaritan that I am, pulled over, I hit my overhead lights just in case anybody ran into me. And I asked her, ma'am, can I help you? What's your problem? And the first thing she said, oh, thank God you're here. I can't believe you arrived so quickly. Automatically, first thing in my head was, I am not who she thinks I am. So, long story short, I get out. I walk around this lady's yard with her. I thought there was a burglary, maybe a home invasion. She was one of those crazy cat ladies. And what was very interesting was she said that the Jersey Devil was terrorizing her. And immediately I just thought, oh, God. I'm at this lady's house in the middle of a snowstorm. So she brings me over to her car and to her roof where it appears something jumped on top of her little red car. And from there, on top of their van, and then from there, on top of their roof, with some sort of hoof, and then went over the top. And we went around the other side of the house where she has a pool at. And in between the backyard where the roof ends and the pool, there's this huge slide mark that was on her roof. And, you know, I didn't want to be mean, but this lady's telling me it's the Jersey Devil. He's over there in the woods. He terrorizes me. So as I'm looking at all this, I go, uh-huh. Okay, well, get back inside because the snow had started to pick up. I'm going to go call my superiors and we're going to have a chat about this. Okay. Whole time she's looking out her blinds, watching what I'm doing. And I just remember it was so damn cold. My heater didn't work that well in my Tahoe. And I was just smoking cigarettes, trying to stay warm. And then comes the sheriff's department. And when this deputy arrives, he goes, "What are you doing here?" Because I work for Homeland Security. And I said, "Well, apparently I'm doing what you were supposed to be doing." And I said, "Crazy cat lady tells me that the Jersey Devil has attacked her home." And that's when he says, "Yes, we get about 4 or 5 calls a week from her. And did she tell you about her husband?" And I said, "Yes." I asked her if her husband was home. She said, "Oh, yeah, he's inside." And I asked, "You know, can I talk to him?" "Oh, no, he's busy." And I said, "Yeah, I wasn't able to talk to the husband. I thought that was kind of weird." He said, "That's because her husband's been dead for like 4 years." I'm like, "Oh, she's that lady." "Yes." "Okay." So, you know, we both get out and we walk and we look at the car and the van and we look at the roof. And because I was heading up to St. Catharines, I believe that was where I was headed to. And I said, "Hey, man, I got to get on the road before this snowstorm just completely bogs me down." And I said, "Look, it looks like a deer jumped on the cars and onto the roof and bust its ass and fell on the other side of the roof. I don't know what to tell you. I'm out of here. Deuces." And I left that guy. I left him there to deal with that crazy cat lady. So witness credibility, right? Have the mindset to know that occasionally some people see things and are so well rehearsed by their story that they believe what they see and can't wait to tell everybody. So let's go down to these last two, and then we'll end this for the day. Kipsey, or the Hudson River Monster, could also be an unusually large and very lost manatee. That would be actually quite funny. And then finally, the Loveland Frogmen. Humanoid frogs about 4 feet tall, first sighted in Loveland, Ohio, and from 2014, stars of their own musical named Hot Damn. It's the Loveland Frog. So we have all types of really weird, funny things here in America. You know what? Let's just continue. I was going to stop it, but let's continue. You have the Mogollon Monster, a Bigfoot-like creature settled along the Mogollon Rim in central and eastern Arizona. No attested sightings confirm its existence, but the monster does have its own website. Mothman. Here's one that has all different types of conspiracies wrapped around it. The couples that see the man-sized bird creature or something. That was the title that the Point Pleasant Register on 16 November 1966 wrote down. The sightings continued for just over a year, popularized by the book The Mothman Prophecies in 1975, then turned into a 2002 movie starring Richard Gere. 25. Paddler. Is Paddler a real monster in Lake Pend, Oriole, Idaho? Or is it just a cover story for secret Navy submarine test? The Puckwudgie, a 3-foot humanoid from Wampanoag, Massachusetts folklore, with enlarged noses, fingers, and ears, able to appear and disappear at will, transform into a porcupine, and lure humans to their deaths. Hence, better left alone. The Pope Lick Monster. The Pope Lick Monster is part man, part bovine, like the man-bear pig, I guess. Lives under a railway bridge in Louisville, Kentucky, and kills people either by luring them onto the tracks or jumping down on motorists beneath the bridge. Quite disappointingly, no actual popes were licked in the making of this urban legend. The Shunka Warrican, an Iowa term meaning carries off dogs. The Shunka Warrican is said to resemble either a hyena or a wolf or both. One such animal was shot and mounted in the 1880s Montana, was displayed in a local store until it mysteriously vanished in the 1980s. Skunk apes. That's the Florida of Bigfoot. Tessie, another spinoff of Nessie, but this is in Lake Tahoe, California. Thunderbirds, large bird-like creatures with enormous wingspans associated with Native American myths, but sighted and shot in modern times, as in one famous apocryphal case in the early 1980s. A picture of a dead Thunderbird nailed to a barn in Arizona is one of many cryptic clues that have mysteriously gone missing. And then finally, we have the good old Wampus Cat, a cougar-like cat stalking eastern Tennessee. Not unlike the Iowa, a half-woman, half-cougar from the Cherokee mythology. Legend has it that when you hear the Wampus cry, someone will die within the next 3 days. So there's your cryptid story for the day. List down in the comments if you have seen any cryptids. For all you who are listening on GS Radio, KYH Radio, and Heroes Nation, thank you very much for watching and for listening. My name's Doug Thornton. Stay frosty.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.